Good morning. The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Ross, Judge Cochran, Judge Frisch, the Honorable Kevin G. Ross presiding.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to this virtual session of the Minnesota Court of Appeals in this April 14 panel. The next matter on for oral argument this morning is in the matter of the children of KMC, KWC, and TJK. Counsel, each of you will have 15 minutes to present your argument with an additional 5 minutes to appellant's counsel if you choose to use it. Please be mindful of the timing restrictions which are indicated in the on your screen. Please do state your name as you commence each leg of your argument so we can keep track of who's making which argument in our audio recording of the presentation. And I'll just forewarn you that I think I may be the only member of the panel who's had some technical issues this morning. So if I become glitchy or it's hard for you to understand me, if I'm asking a question or any of the other judges, please just so indicate and we'll pause the proceedings and see if we can figure out the technological issues. With that, counsel for appellant, you may proceed when you're ready.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Bill Thompson. I'm here on behalf of the appellant. May it please the court. We're here today on an appeal from the 11-6-2020 order from the district court that provided for a transfer of custody of one child and a termination of my client's parental rights on the remaining children. As I'm sure the court is aware, the district court cited three grounds for the basis of that termination of parental rights on top of making citation to the fact that this was also in the children's best interest. I'm going to focus primarily on one issue. I think most of it was outlined in my brief, but what I wanted to focus on was in those three statutory grounds cited by the court, one of the main issues in each was whether or not reasonable efforts occurred. I think when you look at this, the court will hopefully find that they will conclude that reasonable efforts and the district court's determination that reasonable efforts occurred was inaccurate. In this particular case, Ms.
Counsel, one of the issues that I've had in reviewing this file is that we're dealing with a very significant record, many thousands of pages. And we have a 33-page order from the district court with very detailed findings of fact, 117 paragraphs of findings of fact. And when I look at your brief, you don't identify which one of those findings of fact that you claim to be erroneous and not supported by the record. Can you tell us which findings of fact you're challenging here from the district court's order?
Judge, to be perfectly honest with you, I do not have a copy of the decree. Well, let me pull up the addendum. I think it was attached.
Yeah, the district court's order is the addendum.
Yep. And to be honest, Judge, I did not go through and cite the specific paragraphs. And I think to do that at this point in time would be extremely difficult. So I apologize for that.
So the challenge that I have is, what are you appealing? Which finding of the district court are you saying was erroneous? Or how did that's our lens. I mean, we don't reweigh everything. We just determine whether the record supports the findings of the district court. So which finding are you challenging?
I'm challenging those findings where the court made a determination that reasonable efforts actually occurred.
Okay, so then let me turn your attention to paragraph 102 of the district court's order.
102.
So that is one of several examples of the findings of the district court where she set forth a number of efforts that the St. Louis County Public Health and Human Services Department provided to mom. And there's a list of a dozen different efforts that were made. And then the rest of this order, in various portions of the order, indicate that your client alternatively did not appear for those services that were offered or refused those services or also mocked them to the children. So what is it that you are claiming was unreasonable about the efforts that the Public Health and Human Services Department provided as outlined by the district court?
So for example, in that paragraph, one of the issues that, or one of the ones that was cited by Judge Neal at the district court level was the psychological evaluation and follow all recommendations was also part of her plan. My client did take the psychological evaluation. Dr. Paris did testify. But what occurs after a psychological evaluation is given is there's a number of recommendations provided for what the person needs to do to address their mental health issues. In this particular case, the county didn't provide really any assistance in following through with those services that were recommended in the psychological evaluation. They didn't try and assist in helping set up individual counseling. They didn't try and set up the appointment for medication management. They didn't set up the follow-through to potentially get into DBT therapy. Now, I understand.
And why is it that the county's efforts are unreasonable when your client either did not appear for drug tests or did not appear for the counseling sessions that were set up for her in the past?
Judge, I've been doing child protection work for 20 years, and it is extremely rare, unfortunately, that you have parties who are willing to cooperate and just do everything from the start. In this particular case, my client, it's indisputable, suffers from mental health issues. Part of the reasonable efforts has to be that the county adopts the way they deal with individuals to address their specific needs. In this particular case, Mr. Moody, I've known Mr. Moody for many years. In many respects, I admire him as a social worker. But in this particular case, it falls on Mr. Moody to adapt his ways of doing things. It's not just, well, they refused, because if that was the case, child protection would be really easy. We'd be going to permanency on just about every case there is, because almost inherently the parties refuse. It's on the professionals to try and work through those barriers. And yes, yes, ma'am, or Your Honor.
So what additional steps are you arguing should have been taken that weren't taken?
That's difficult for me to say, Judge, because I obviously was just appointed on the appeal. I mean, based on the records, I mean, it looks to me that once Ms. Kraft decided she wasn't going to cooperate, that was kind of the end of it. And it doesn't look like social services really ever tried to reengage, tried to bring her back into the fold. And then from that point forward, it just continued on this path towards permanency. And again, that's where I disagree with these types of assessments, because I do believe when it comes to reasonable efforts, the burden is on the agency and not necessarily upon the parent. And, you know, one of the other things which my client wanted me to highlight, you know, part of the reunification plan, when you look at that reunification plan, at least for St. Louis County, it's a fairly generic plan. You know, obviously I can't comment on other jurisdictions, but it was maintain sobriety. It was get a psychological evaluation, cooperate with the agency, sign authorizations, those types of things. And my client did do a number of those, but one of them was to have visitation with the children. And one of the things that my client wanted to highlight was that at least with the youngest child who was born during the course of this case, if I'm not mistaken, visitation never really occurred. There was a year with no visitation with that child. many of it, and I'm sure the court's aware, obviously, that the pandemic created a number of issues and roadblocks, especially in child protection matters. But in that, it was cited that, you know, my client needed to come through and have visits, but wasn't even allowed because of the pandemic.
Well, I mean, is that entirely accurate? I mean, the record does indicate that there were safety protocols that were put in place that your client refused to adhere to, such as wearing a mask around the children when during the visits. I mean, for the safety of the children, those protocols needed to be followed. Wouldn't you agree?
Would I personally agree? Yes. Do I think the country has a number of people who would disagree with that assessment? That is also true. But, you know, and for example, housing was also another issue. The county really didn't provide any services to assist Ms. Kraft in trying to obtain housing other than give her a couple of phone numbers. Yet that was a critical piece of the plan. We're dealing with a person who has mental health issues, who clearly has cognitive issues that were cited in the record, and also has poverty as a barrier. And yet, they're really, when you put them in the plan, the county didn't provide those services as I think are warranted. The other issue, and since time is running out, I wanted to focus on was the best interests of the child.
Before you get
clearly,
there,
the court in this particular matter has read
Mr.
the transcript.
Thompson. Before you go there, let me interrupt with an overarching question I had. I teach trial advocacy, and one of the things that the students in law school have to do is to follow the rules, and I have to grade briefs. And if I get a brief from a student that doesn't contain the citation to the record when a factual statement is presented, the student has a really hard time getting a passing grade in my class. I'm wondering why it is that you've submitted a brief with absolutely no citation to the factual record in your statement of facts for any one of the statements of facts that you say are, in fact, facts that we ought to accept as a court.
Judge, I apologize for that. When I wrote the brief initially, usually my course in practice is to go back and highlight those citations as I'm writing it. But unfortunately, in this particular brief, I missed it, and that's on me.
Fair enough. It's just hard for us to figure out what exactly are the facts. And, you know, we do check the representations made by counsel. You probably are not surprised. Perhaps you've had opponents who have done this where statements of facts are made and some liberties are taken with the record. And so we have no way of double checking if we don't have a citation. That's why.
I do try and not do take the liberties. So I hope I did not do that. But I do apologize, Judge, that does fall on me. And unfortunately, you can't submit an amended brief after I noticed my mistake.
Thank you. Well, you were going to go on to the best interest argument. I don't want to take you too much off track.
No, that's okay, Judge. I appreciate it. And you're, as I was indicating, as far as the best interests are concerned, obviously, in this case, we had two children who testified, and I think anybody who reads that testimony can see that it was fairly heart-wrenching. But one of the things that was abundantly clear in that testimony was that the children still want to have contact with their parents. And I also think that one of the difficulties in doing these particular matters is the impact that the TPR also has on the relationship between the siblings. And because once the parents' relationships are severed, then technically too is that relationship between the siblings. There was no permanency resource identified at the time of trial. And when you take into consideration the children's testimony, the need for wanting to see the parents, the testimony that the children's behaviors and mental health was impacted when they weren't able to see the parents, it's hard to determine how a TPR would have been in the best interest of these kids. There's no guarantees that these kids are going to be placed together. Obviously, the oldest child was done on a transfer of custody. So in theory, that child potentially is still going to have ongoing contact with the parents because of it, the nature of it now being a custody transfer rather than a complete severance of that relationship. And all of those things need to be balanced by the district court, in my opinion, to come to an adequate conclusion as to whether or not this determination was truly in the best interest, which I
and
don't.
So what about paragraph 112 of the district court's order is inadequate to address the balancing that you are you're discussing now? I mean, I understand the argument, and I understand the children's testimony of their desire to maintain a relationship with mom. But it seems to me the district court took that into account in assessing the best interests of the children.
I apologize as I'm quickly reviewing that paragraph. Well, I think in what I was trying to state earlier, Judge, there's reference to the fact that Autumn and the home where Autumn is at is going to be a permanency resource and willing to adopt. It does reference that Caleb, Carter, and Connor are not in a placement where the children are going to be adopted. So there's no talk about what the plan is going forward for all of these children to remain contact. There's no testimony, there's no information there that talks about how Autumn is going to continue to have a relationship with those siblings. There's no discussion or balancing on how the three children, the three boys who were had their parental rights terminated are still going to maintain that contact with their one sibling that isn't. And even at the time of trial, there was also a sixth child that was actually an adult and out of the home that had a relationship with his siblings. And those are the types of things that, in addition to looking at what happens with the parents, I would urge the court to just consider that I think there has to be a balancing between the siblings as well, because it's not just one relationship that's terminated. I apologize, Judge.
Although you're out of time, I'm curious, what is the best, most persuasive case you found for the proposition of law that you're saying, that the district court abuses its discretion in the best interest analysis if it fails to consider the relationship or to discuss the relationship between siblings and how the termination will impact those relationships? Were you able to find any cases to support that?
I could not, Judge.
All right. Well, thank you. You will have five additional minutes for rebuttal if you'd like to use it. Counsel for respondent.
Thank you. Good morning, Your Honors. Counsel, my name is Benjamin Rinaldo. I represent the respondent, St. Louis County Public Health and Human Services. May it please the court. Your Honors, I'll start off by just stating I have arguments for all of the different statutory elements that were challenged, but I understand the crux of the matter comes down to the challenge of whether the trial court's findings were clearly erroneous or not in regards to appellant's main argument, which is reasonable efforts and best interests. And so I will attempt to focus on that. And if there's areas that need further clarification from respondent's brief, I'd be happy to go into it as well.
I think Mr. Thompson I'm sorry.
Can you respond to Mr. Thompson's argument about the best interests and whether the court adequately considered the relationship between the siblings in determining the best interests?
Yes, Your Honor. In appellant's challenge and in Mr. Thompson's argument lies something that I think the record is pretty rife with, which is the consideration of not only the statements of the children who did testify, the two elder children, but the connection between both the father who voluntarily terminated his parental rights pursuant to some agreement with the youngest child. As the court is well aware, statute does not permit communication and contact agreements in cases where there is no identified permanency resource. This was discussed at length at the trial and at the time that the father did voluntarily terminate, and certainly was something that was on the mind of the court. I know in paragraph 112 of the court's order, I do believe it's where the district court does discuss that balancing test, as the court has already cited, and also the testimony of the two older boys, and that the court does not take that testimony lightly. However, given the tools available by law, as well as case law, and in the respondent's brief, there is a citation to in the matter of the welfare of DJN, which is 568 Northwest 2nd 170 at page 177, which is the Minnesota Court of Appeals case from 1997. In that case, the court does say that the children's preference is merely one aspect the court must take into consideration when determining best interests. And further, there the court found that despite the bond between the child and the parent, quote, the hopes and dreams of the child's future would not survive a return to the mother's care. So if I first address each children's bond with the mother in regards to best interest moving forward.
Can I pause you there for a second? I'm not sure you're getting at the question, at least as I understood it from Judge Cochran, and I'm curious about it also. Obviously, the statute regards the best interest of the child in preserving the relationship with the parent, but I think Mr. Thompson's point is that the best interest of the child in maintaining the relationship with the parent in this case has an impact potentially on the relationship between the children. And so do you agree that that is a factor the court should consider? And if so, do you, what's your position as to whether the district court adequately considered and discussed the impact of the termination on the relationship between the siblings?
I appreciate that, Judge, and thank you for steering me back in the direction of the question. I do argue that the district court took that into account. In this matter, there are five children, one of which is placed with the biological relative, which facilitated a transfer of custody. And so that child was able to stay in contact with not only his parents, but other relatives. And because the statute permitted it, a transfer of custody was possible there. In regards to the younger children, placement options, both in regards to their great needs that the three middle children had, as well as the needs of the infant at birth, necessitated two different placements. The placement that the three middle children were placed in was one in which it was determined at the time wasn't a permanency option. And again, as I stated previously, that ties the hands in negotiations in regards to communication and contact. But the court, I think, should, in evaluating the best interests of children in these cases, consider all the factors involved, not only the relationship with their parents, but also with their siblings. And I think the law, and I don't have the exact statutory citation right now, but I do know that it is permitted to create sibling contact agreements in such cases to keep the relationship there. And so I do think that is part of the best interest in regards to children in these cases. And I think that the trial court did address it as best as could be done under the circumstances of multiple placements that were necessitated by the needs of
the kid. I'm just curious. I'm curious whether you're conceding that the relationship with the maintaining the relationship between siblings is a factor that should be the focus of a termination of parental rights, or instead the focus of a permanency placement proceeding.
I would argue that it's something that should be considered, or I would concede that it's something that should be considered in the totality of looking at the best interests in a given circumstance. However, there's a number of competing issues that need to be analyzed by the district court. And in this case, based on the needs of the children and what is available through the means possible, both at the county level and through statute. The court made a decision that was best suited for the children's needs and their best interests, given the context of the case and the facts. In addition to the best interests argument, appellant makes a strong, or makes the majority of their arguments in regards to reasonable efforts.
Counsel, can I, in that regard, can I turn your attention to Mr. Thompson's, I think, two primary arguments, at least ones that he made today, and that is that the county did not make reasonable efforts to assist mom in complying with the recommendations of the psychological assessment, and also did not make reasonable efforts in assisting mom in securing acceptable housing for her and the children. Can you just talk about those efforts in response to counsel's arguments, please?
Yes, Your Honor.
Thank you.
The record comprising of the social worker's testimony, as well as his notes, which the court cited, speaks of multiple instances in which the county, following the psychological evaluation, both attempted to reach the mother by mail in laying out the different elements that were being incorporated into the reunification plan following the psychological evaluation, as well as the impact they would have on the case, the rationale for them, and what it would take to engage in them. In addition to that letter, the county also scheduled a meeting with the appellant to sit down and go over each individual element that was being added from the psychological evaluation, what needed to be done in an attempt to engage her in a dialogue about, you know, what she would need to make that happen. And the meeting that was held, as was testified to, was one in which the appellant stated she was not in need of any of those services, despite the county's attempts to engage her in them, and that she wouldn't be engaging in them. And despite this, Mr. Moody continued to testify that even when the trial, there was a point in time in which the trial had been continued, Mr. Moody testified that he reached out to appellant and encouraged her to continue to try to work her plan, continue to try to engage in the elements of it, because she had more time in which to do so. And so, as the court found, reasonable efforts were certainly done in regards to that area, and continued to be done throughout the life of the case as the case morphed and changed, especially in regards to the recommendations of the psyche eval. In regards to housing, appellant's brief is inaccurate in the facts as far as whether or not appellant had housing during the case. There was no point in which she was didn't have some dwelling to live in. Mr. Moody testified that early on in the case, appellant was living along with her spouse in the home of her mother. Attempts were made to meet there to assess the safety in the home in regards to whether or not it would be a place where reunification could happen. Appellant didn't appear for that meeting. As appellant moved out of that house eventually and stayed in a long-term hotel stay, and then eventually, as she testified to with a friend towards the end of the case, the addresses of those locations were never given to the court or were never given to social services. However, she was able to obtain mail at general delivery. She claimed to have employment and she claimed to have housing, to the point in which she testified that yes, the children could go home to her care at the time of the trial. Despite this, Mr. Moody testified that he encouraged the appellant to find individual stable housing. He encouraged her to arrive for a meeting with him in which they'd sit down and go over what aid was available in affording housing, as well as what resources were available in looking for housing. And he testified that he encouraged her to that it didn't matter what the housing was, as long as it was safe and stable, to start moving in the direction of reunifying with the children, to which, as he testified, the appellant stated that she didn't need his help. She was looking at places herself and didn't engage in that meeting. And so
along those lines, I mean, help me out with the record here. I didn't see, when in my review of the record, any place where mom specifically asked for a particular service or assistance in any regard that the county didn't provide. Is that an accurate reading of the record?
Your Honor, that's the position of the respondent here. And moreover, as elements came up or things came up throughout the life of this case, and I think this paints the greater picture of reasonable efforts in this case. For example, at the beginning of the case, drug use was not something that was on the radar of the county, for lack of better terms. As the case progressed, records were obtained from out of state that hinted that there may have been drug use that led to social services involvement in the past by the mother. When that was found, elements were added to the plan to address drug use. As the record shows, midway through the case, appellant gave birth to the youngest child, who was suffering from neonatal abstinence syndrome. The mother admitted to habitual use of cannabis. The mother admitted to, appellant admitted to obtaining and using Suboxone illegally to treat allegedly tooth pain. And as the case progressed, the county continued to take these concerns and factor them into the plan. And so this greater statement that reasonable efforts in regards to the reunification plan and what was offered to try to correct the conditions that led to out-of-home placement is just not true. I think in the amount of plans that I have seen come at the beginning of a case, they do have a boilerplate look, but it's in the process of the case, as the parents make a rapport in a relationship with the social worker, that these plans can really grow. And in this case, I think you really see the plan growing in the record and adding elements to try to reunify the family. In sum, and I see I'm running out of time, I would continue to argue that reasonable efforts were most certainly completed by the county here in attempting to provide services to reunify the family. The record shows it. The district court was not erroneous in making its findings in regards to those efforts, and that the best interests of the children certainly outweighed that relationship with appellant in this case, supporting that the termination of parental rights is in their best interest, and that the district court did properly weigh those elements in making its decision. So I would ask that the district court's order be affirmed. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Thompson, any rebuttal?
No, Your Honors, unless you have questions.
I'm just... Judge Frisch or Judge Cochran, any questions for Mr. Thompson? I believe the panel is satisfied with the argument, with no need for further questions. Thank you both, Mr. Thompson, Mr. Rinaldo, for your arguments today and for your briefs. The matter is submitted under advisement, and we will issue our opinion within the statutory period.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. Have a nice day.
You too.